Welcome to The Buzz. I'm Christopher Conover. This week, what efforts to increase rural broadband access means for Arizonans. If you live in a city, it's easy to take fast internet connections for granted. But for large swaths of the state, broadband internet is not something they have access to. But recent efforts are greatly expanding the number of Arizonans who can access high-speed internet and the modern advantages that brings. Those efforts are coming all the way from county-level governments to large-scale federal programs. The federal bipartisan infrastructure law, American Rescue Plan, and the Inflation Reduction Act together set aside more than $100 billion to improve internet access in the nation's rural and tribal communities, of which Arizona has received more than $5 billion. And an Arizona Commerce Authority report details more than $400 million in grants and spending aimed at improving internet access around the state. We start today's show by learning about a project that is using some of that money to expand internet access in Yuma County. Among those most likely to benefit from expanded access are workers in the area's economic driver, the agriculture industry. PJ Way is the broadband program manager for the county. He oversees what's being called the Middle Mile Backbone Project.
Middle Mile Project is really designed to provide a dark fiber connectivity throughout the county in Yuma County. So what we're providing is a lower barrier of entry so that ISPs have ability to access a fiber backbone that allows them to deliver last mile services. That's long story short, that's the best way to gist it.
You mentioned dark fiber when talking about this. Somebody's going to hear this and go, what, the dark web? I'm pretty sure you guys are not installing the dark web. So what is dark fiber?
Dark fiber is essentially if you take the conduit, which has tubes inside that conduit, and then you fill it with these little glass tubes, those little glass tubes are what are your fiber. So that fiberglass is what transmits your data from point A to point B. Well, that, it stayed at the speed of light. The challenge there is we are providing nothing with that perspective. We put the glass in the ground, but we are not providing that service. What we do is we provide the transports. It would be the equivalent of being able to put in a highway. Now, we aren't doing the off-ramps to what neighborhoods. We're not going to be providing what kind of cars need to be transported on it or what you can or can't ship on that transport highway. We are providing simply the highway, the structure that holds all of that in place so you can start building off the branches and developing it further.
So how's it going so far? I mean, it's a relatively new project, I understand. So working well?
It is. So inside of Arizona, there are only two counties that are currently pursuing a middle mile project, and it's Yuma County and Navajo County. When I say that work in the ground, there is work that's being done right now behind the scenes where you have other counties, the latest being Pima, that is looking to do this very similar thing. We've made great progress at Yuma County. So this was about a $40 million in total investment that's going into developing this ground fiber network. We are about 62-63% done with the first phase of that of completion, and our expectation is to have the first three rings completed by the end of December of this year. That's our expectation. Then we will go from City of Yuma eastward towards Tacna and Dateland areas, and that will take us another year. So we'll be done with that complete by December of 2024. Is our goal. And then we'll have a complete fiber build with redundant loops that are connecting so that we have sustainability. And we're working with people like ADOT. We're looking at how we can connect back to ADOT areas, how we could provide services for them. Working with the ACA to try and make sure that we're getting the attention to come through for I-10, I-8, be able to connect us to San Diego, back over to Tucson, and then up to Kingman, Lake Havasu areas as well. So then it puts us on the 40 stretch, and we've got this nice little circuit beginning in the state of Arizona.
You mentioned the next set of rings, if you will, going out towards Dateland and places like that. The Yuma metro area is decent sized, and I assume kind of within the metro area, the city of Yuma, internet connection's pretty good, but how are things once you get out into the county towards Dateland and other places like that?
Great question. And even inside of the city of Yuma proper, there are very limited opportunities. There's only a handful of players that actually participate in providing a physical connected asset. A lot of times they have microwave towers that are doing various types of shots across the distances so that it's your streaming speed and your performance is not always great. Obviously, when you have connected fiber, and when we're looking at putting in 500 megs as being our minimum, that's what we're hoping for. You know, we want right now the current standard for the FCC is 120. So that's 100 megs up, 20 megs down. We want to see if we can't change that. How do we change it so that we have better performance, that we have symmetrical service, even up to gig speed symmetrically? We can offer that to all of our providers, being able to get all the ISPs involved. And it's not just the city of Yuma. We also have the city of Somerton and San Luis, who are also in that area, and they are also connected in these fiber rings.
So Yuma, when most people think of it, they think about agriculture. How does broadband and this type of access, especially once we get out of the city of Yuma proper, help out farmers, which are such a big part of the economy in that area?
Yeah, from an agricultural standpoint, Yuma County provides about 80% of the nation's food supply for leafy greens for about 8 to 9 months out of the year. And when you start thinking, what does it take to be a farmer? It's not just about the land and the crop rotations. Those are very important, but it's also the water. Water conservation is a big topic today in political landscapes. So when we look at how do we improve the performance of our agricultural industries, they have smart farming technology. They have newer technology that's going to have autonomous tractors, drones that are going to be able to do more industrial agriculture. So when you have cities that build up around farms, you can't bring in a plane to do crop dusting. So you do it smart with drones. You can bring in drones that pilot in, do the same type of care for the crops. They can start gathering artificial intelligence data about the health of the crops, seeding, timelines, what the weather patterns are doing for it. There's a ton of data that goes into that. That data is collected today and actually put to some of the providers for those services, right? Your larger John Case, John Deere, or Case and John Deere, those types of industries would have access to a lot of that data. This gives a much more robust picture of what that type of data is. And the middle mile builds that opportunity because they need those high performance speeds of data being sent up rather than pulled down. They're not streaming Netflix. They're actually sending data. They're trying to provide information about their crops and the patterns that are being developed.
Like you said, not streaming Netflix or just getting the good gossip. This is actual a big part of farming now.
Absolutely. And realistically, you know, this is not, when we talk about farming, it's really becomes now about food security, which becomes part of national security. If we think about food security, you start cutting back water supplies by 10% in an effort to do conservation. If you do that arbitrarily, you could potentially put at risk food. That becomes a serious risk factor across not just the country, but around the world. So we have to be intelligent about how we start designing our technology to measure our water, to be more accurate and build better environments that minimal use of water will improve the crop production.
I assume this is going to do more than just help with food security, therefore national security, a lot of education, especially in areas outside Yuma proper, as you mentioned, San Luis, which is not a small place, 35,000 people, give or take, on population, Somerton, other places like that for education and general economy for folks who are not necessarily in the agricultural sector.
Absolutely. That's another great point. The middle mile is going to help provide that opportunity for potential E-rate funding opportunities, that it helps build that middle mile infrastructure. So if we were to take a look at what the potential is for middle mile and why that's critical, a lot of times, whether that's E-rate funding or we have an investment that's coming from a larger corporation that wants to be an ISP in the area, they have a significant amount of money they must invest. Like I mentioned, we're investing $40 million. That $40 million would have to come out of somebody else's pocket if they wanted to be able to develop that last mile. Well, now what we'll be able to provide is we provide that middle mile dark fiber service. All of those players can now come in with a lower barrier of entry. They all have equal access. They all have the same rights and responsibilities. So it becomes The middle mile fiber network becomes a dark fiber network, becomes a part of what represents for the citizens that it serves, not just the ISPs. And the goal there is that we give all ISPs equal opportunity and access.
You've mentioned a couple times the cost, $40 million. That is not an insignificant amount of money. Is this federal money, state money, county money? Where are you getting $40 million?
We have a lot of different areas. So the county itself has put in $20 million. Other of this funding comes through ARPA funding, as well as some grants that have recently come from the governor's office. We were awarded $6 million to continue another phase, which is going to help propagate the farming needs. So we're looking to develop that further.
You mentioned to Zach, our show producer, in an email that this could have an impact more than just locally, but nationally. You talked a little bit about national security through food security, but even internationally. Talk about that a little more, if you would.
Absolutely. You mentioned the value asset of or value proposition for education in some of these areas, what that means for healthcare, what that means for all the quality of life things that we would all hope for. We have already been approached by the university, by a university in England that's looking to come out and develop a facility. They would like to build partnerships with the University of Arizona. So I know that these conversations have been happening. There's more people would probably be willing to address that from the University of Arizona's perspective, but I was always privileged to be part of those conversations and know that that interest extends well beyond the borders of the United States.
Native American tribes, we hear them talking a lot about internet access. There are some tribal lands in Yuma County, but not a lot as compared to other counties in Arizona. Is this in any way benefiting some of the tribal lands in Yuma County?
It does, indeed. The Kokopah tribe in the Yuma County area is one that I've actually been meeting with recently. And the goal there is to identify what their needs are and how I can share what the middle mile provides. Now, from that perspective, that's to help provide education and share what the story is of the middle mile. How they choose to develop that and what they're looking to accomplish, that's obviously well within their jurisdiction, obviously. Sovereign nations have those wonderful rights. And I know across the county, I've been very fortunate across the state of Arizona to work in with the Navajo, Hopi, and Apache tribal nations as well. When I was living in those areas and working in this very similar projects. It's funny because it's kind of like the question of people say, well, do you like what you do? Well, I do. I love what I do because I know what it does. It's really making a difference. Inside of our tribal nations, we have communities of people that have a huge history of culture and heritage, and they don't want to lose that. And what happens sometimes, unfortunately, is that their best and brightest and their best opportunity to help the rest of their community members leave. They leave for opportunities for education and healthcare and all the things that everybody desires and needs. And that's not wrong for those younger students. However, it takes away from the opportunities of those tribes to continue to flourish in the way they hope. So what the fiber does in providing the right internet service provisioning is it gives them a chance to grow where they're planted. They get a chance if they choose to stay home to take their education, they can. If they choose to stay in their homelands and grow everything from agriculture to the latest business model that they want to perceive, or politically, they can take charge in those areas. But they don't have to leave because the technology is going to help deliver the tools that they want and need to succeed and not have to go seek them elsewhere.
All right. Well, thanks for spending some time with us.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
That was PJ Way, Broadband Program Manager for Yuma County. Among the places most frequently mentioned as lacking high-speed internet are the state's tribal lands. In 2019, the American Indian Policy Institute at Arizona State University found that about a third of people living on tribal reservations only had internet access through a smartphone, while another fifth of that group had no access at all. And even in places that have access, the cost of that service may be prohibitive. Federal and state grants have specifically targeted increasing access to broadband for the state's Native American lands, with more than $100 million set aside for such efforts in Arizona alone. One such grant recently went to the Thana-Ottum Utility Authority. It's partnering with Baycells Technologies to expand wireless broadband access. Brian Fickett is the TOUA's general manager. Our conversation starts with him describing what internet connectivity was like on the Tohono O'odham Nation before the program.
TOUA, the Tohono O'odham Utility Authority, is the utility, provides all the utility services for the nation. And that was set up back in the 70s. And back in the 80s, early 80s, TOUA set up a phone company to provide phone service out in that area. And so they ran copper throughout the nation. And then as internet came available, they ran a DSL line out there. They started offering DSL services for internet, which was very slow. So really back in the 90s is when they really started looking at this. And then they started rolling out fiber, putting in fiber, because there was grants available to start putting in fiber. They started slowly putting this out. But when the pandemic came about, it really highlighted the need for broadband services. Prior to the pandemic, the nation really was not participating in broadband and internet that TOUA provided. And it was not the best at that time. But that really highlighted, the pandemic really highlighted the need for it. And there's stories of kids sitting out in the middle of a village under a tree participating in school activities because it was all online. And that was where they could get a connection to the internet.
I remember during the pandemic, or just after kind of the first year of it, talking to education folks out on the nation, and they said that was one of the big problems when everything went online. Urban areas fine, but the nation, that's people are really spread out.
Right, correct. And that's been some of the issue. The nation has 4,400 square miles that we have to serve, and that takes a lot of money to build the backbone infrastructure. But with the CARES Act and ARPA funds and some of the other grants that started coming out because of the pandemic, TOUA really took off and started putting in fiber to the home to where we're going to be by 2025 or 26, we'll have 100% of the nation covered fiber to the home.
What's that do speed-wise? That's what everybody always talks about. What are your upload speeds and your download speeds and all of that?
So our speeds are, we have to comply with 100 megabytes per second download and 20 megabytes upload. So we will, by the time 2025, 26 happens, we'll have those speeds in place and people can take advantage of it. Of course, we will offer speeds that are slower because one of the issues we have is people can't afford broadband services in those areas because they're about 50% of our customer base is low income. So that's kind of the other issue is we can put all this fiber out there, but how are we going to sustain the system? And that's where we rely on our telephone company. We get funds from USF, but it still becomes an issue in the affordability and educating the members of the nation on what they really have. And that's, we've partnered this year with the community college, and they are training members of the nation on how to use a computer. It's interesting to be just 50 miles from Tucson, and there is people on the nation that don't even know how to set up email. They don't even know how to turn on a computer. So there's an education component to this that TOCC is filling, and they got a grant to develop this program. And TOUA is following up on that with this program. But the other issue we have is you know, by 2025 or 26, we're going to be 100% built out with fiber to the home. In the meantime, what will we do is how can we get this out a little bit faster? And that's where this wireless network came in. It fits really good with the nation. The government sold off the 2.5 gigahertz spectrum back a few years ago to the tribes. And we're able to use that spectrum to bring to the nation this wireless internet system. The vision ultimately is to have the whole nation broadband service, so where they could use a laptop or a tablet, an iPad in their house and be working on it, and then walk outside and go in their car and still be able to maintain that service. And that's only going to help to bring education to the nation. Telehealth is what we eventually want to bring to the nation. And just these different services and the capability of doing economic development, people starting their own businesses on the nation. So there's a bigger plan in this whole thing, and that's where we want to be in the next 5 years or so.
And I would think in the short term, as you mentioned, the wireless, that's obviously a lot faster to put up because, as you said, you're dealing with vast amount of territory, the size of the state of Connecticut almost, and it's a lot faster to do the wireless now than have to wait to get the fiber laid in the next couple of years.
That's correct, yes.
And it sounds like, yeah, big differences can be made very, very quickly for the lives of everybody living on the nation. And as you said, eventually telehealth, which is huge.
Yeah, and it just this network, it's just going to open the nation to the world. And one of the concerns that the elders have is we're laying fiber and we're bringing this communication to the nation is their culture. And to me, the way I see it is this allows their culture to even expand. And them a better way to maintain it, and more people understand it. You know, it's just a whole new thing. But the other issue we're going to be facing is we're talking 120 system. The government's talking about digital divide on the tribal nations. One of the concerns I have is in the next 5-10 years, on the regular service in like in Tucson and Phoenix and those areas, they're going to be having one gigabyte services to their houses. And so how do we keep up the nation with this new technology and how do we keep them going, you know, as technology changes? That's going to be the challenge going forward.
I'm not an engineer by any stretch of the imagination, but once the fiber line is laid to the homes, is there a way for you all to increase it at the top end, or do you have to then go through and relay new lines and all of that?
No, the fiber lines will be good for 30 to 40 or 50 years. It's the rest of the equipment will need to increase and change it out. And even the modems that we're installing at the homes, those will eventually need to be changed. What we've done, though, recently with Calix is they have 1 gigabyte modems that we are looking at purchasing and starting to roll those out on the nation so that the modems in the houses will be able to handle the faster service. We'll just need to upgrade the backbone, the stuff in the central office that controls everything.
That makes sense. As I said, you all have a lot of fiber, a lot of trenches to dig across a vast, vast area.
Yes. And the other thing is we're in a really unique situation because all of the services are handled by one organization, the Tohono O'odham Utility Authority. We can take all those services and use this fiber to help us with communications on all the rest of the services. And even the wireless system, we're looking at, that's going to be a backup to our fiber. So if one of our fibers gets cut, then we're going to have the wireless that everybody can fall back on.
That's all really good. Well, thanks for spending some time with us to fill us all in.
Yeah. There's some exciting things happen on the nation. So.
It sounds like it. I can't wait to hear what's next.
Yes.
Although you may want to wait because you have to put it all together. So
that's where we are continuing to work with the government and get more and more funding. If it wasn't for the grant funding, we couldn't do what we're doing.
That was Brian Fickett, General Manager of the Thana-Ottum Utility Authority. And that's the buzz for this week. Tune in next week as we look at efforts to build up Tucson's housing stock. Find all our episodes online at azpm.org and subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcast. Just search for The Buzz Arizona. We're also on the NPR app. Zach Ziegler is our producer with production help from Desiree Tucker. Our music is by Enter the Haggis. I'm Christopher Conover. Thanks for listening.
Arizona Public Media's original programming is made possible in part by the Community Service Grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.